I'm Don Merrill, and I'm talking with Zelos Marchant. Zelos is running for the Oregon legislature in the 35th district. In full disclosure, Zelos and I have known each other for about 5 years. Zelos, welcome.
Thank you.
My first question for you is why do you want to be a state representative?
I don't think anybody's born wanting to be a state representative. And it certainly is a lot of work. For me, having grown up several decades in Washington County, born in Nashville, I love how diverse this county is. I've chosen to grow my businesses here and raise my son here and my family and my chosen fam. Be that as it may, we're all very anxious for what the future holds. Oregon has not done well to build solid infrastructure in a variety of areas. So as a small business owner, as somebody who's active in the advocacy world, I have the freedom and the lived expertise and the professional expertise to continue the work that I've done in housing and healthcare to help lay some strong bones from where Oregon is going. So it's just the right time.
You know, the 35th district is strongly Democratic, which is why David Martin is the only Republican running unopposed in the primary. But he reminds me of so many other Republicans I've talked to who believe Oregon has had it with Democratic leadership. So is his optimism misplaced? And if so, why do you think you can beat him?
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it optimism, but I do think he speaks to how frustrated everyone is in Oregon overall, regardless of whether they're a Democrat or not. I can tell you after knocking on, thousands of doors at this point, that even those in a Democratic camp and a strong blue camp are really frustrated over the lack of resources or how these resources are not being protected. I can count to measure 110, where the cannabis money was supposed to go towards wraparound services, harm reduction, behavioral health, and a host of other programming. And it's being threatened right now. So, as I'm knocking and as I'm talking to people and asking what's important to them, what I'm hearing even in the Democratic camp is, frustration. I'll practically do anything if it can solve the houseless camp around the corner. I'll practically do anything if it means that, my kid can go to a good school and safely. I'll do anything if it means that public safety gets reimagined into what we want. So, with what Martin's pointing at is I think the reality that we need something different. It's not business as usual. And I think everyone came through the pandemic still processing and coming to terms with that. So
you're also running against Farah Chaichi in the primary. And she, like you, is a Democrat. When I interviewed her last month, she said she is the exact median age for the county and a renter. And that makes her able to relate to the densely packed housing for the district. And she says she has a lot of prior experience watching other candidates develop their ground game. So why do you think you can beat her?
Well, yeah, I don't know where she gets the information that she's of median age. I think she's about 35 to my 42. And our voter base, even though I've mentioned several times to lots of different people, organizations, and media outlets that we are over 45% of color, out here in Washington County, even though Oregon is overall incredibly white. And our voter base, though, is still incredibly, incredibly white, with voters usually over 40 or 65. In terms of watching the ground game, I don't really like to talk about, what we do in policy shaping, as a game. I get that a lot of people look at politics like this is a game and there's like lots of deals that are being made. I'm here to just really dispel a lot of that and say, no, that's actually not quite how that goes at all. The work that I've done, I've actively helped to shape policies around housing. I'm helping with a lot of other leaders, a lot of other organizations, both government and not, in the Tri-County area to get HB 2100 through. And that gave us more DEI intersections and more access as community organizations and people to procurement when that was much, much more difficult. And it's a small win for some, but that really opens a small floodgate to get real data to the people who are making decisions. And more than that, to have community leaders like myself continue to shape good governance. And that's definitely in my wheelhouse. And then I'm the only Democratic candidate to be backed by Basic Rights Oregon, Planned Parenthood, and Pro-Choice, among others. And that is because I've worked closely as a storyteller and a policy shaper and supporting lobbyist to continue to lead Oregon on a pathway to where in a couple, 3 years, hopefully, we'll be able to be a handful of states that can offer health care for all that is trans-inclusive, LGBTQ-inclusive, with support for abortion access and healthcare access for the houseless community. I say, you know, abortion is not just about protecting women's uteruses. It's about making sure that we have clinics the houseless can go to, because they're not going to go to Kaiser, they're not going to go to Plan, not going to go to Providence. They're going to go to these clinics. We need to be, somebody needs to be collaborative. They need to be able to shake hands with somebody that might not necessarily have your back in some other policies, but might help you win a really important one that everybody can speak to. You know, there's a lot of polarization between rural and like inner city areas, for example, with healthcare. And I'm here to say, like, I have Republican friends. I think everybody can relate to the fact that we all need healthcare, and how we support that looks differently depending on where somebody is living. These have to be nuanced and kind of a team player about that.
You talked before about how you're a storyteller, and you do have a lot of experience delivering content to the public, both through a theater company called TNA Grand Theater and 10 Tiny Talks, as well as a journalist. You were a former news director for KBOO in Portland. So can you talk about how those experiences inform your run and how you will inform your term if you get into the legislature?
You know, I've mentioned both on and off record since we know each other that, you know, I was asked to run before, and I was really concerned that it would take away from the work that I was already doing for my community and these organizations. But I think that speaks to just what it means to be a policy shaper, what it means to be somebody who just wants to help and do the right thing. I'm certainly not alone in that. And, you know, I wasn't sure whether I would have the time or what the right decision would be. But the more I thought about it, the more I talked about it with my family, and the more I spoke with my colleagues and supporters about that, you know, I learned that this is, you know, the work of a representative, to constantly stay in touch with your neighbors, constantly stay in touch with your community. That's the work that I love to do. And, you know, storytelling, to use that term colloquially, you know, has been a profound experience for me. For instance, canvassing, you know, being able to disseminate information, to talk, to speak to people in different languages, and to listen and then internalize that, and then be able to re-put that information out there, you know, in new ways for each person. That's been a really big skill set for me. It's something that's close to my heart. I love it. I feel like we all have responsibilities as human beings to speak multiple languages so we can hopefully understand each other better. You know, to circle back to your earlier question about, you know, optimism and, you know, the state of politics today and how people are feeling, I know everyone's ready for a change. You know, we need somebody who can navigate politics, but we also need somebody who knows they're a human being and can hold on to that. And that's something that I certainly offer strongly.
I was very interested to see on the Secretary of State's website that you've spent 15 years in healthcare. You worked as a last responder and in forensic support. And as you know, Oregon is struggling to provide healthcare to the houseless community. So how will that work influence how you work to provide more mental health services, for instance?
Well, I'm very, as I mentioned, close to all these topics. Anybody who just follows my story, you know, in the About Me section on the website, or, you know, remotely can just Google me, finds that I grew up really, really poor. My mother is escaping an abusive relationship, and we went through welfare, and she went through Jobs Plus trainings and various other government programs to work in government administrative services for the veterans and disabled services, and then eventually was able to buy her first home in North Plains in 1996. And I come from a family that has a lot of healthcare workers and educators, and then who also in Moonlight is creative. So, you know, caring for community is something that I was born into. I also think it's a part of my character. And I started in Tualatin Hospital as a hospital tech or candy striper back in 1996, wore the whole like red and white apron get up. If anybody remembers that. And, you know, it's been a powerful experience being, you know, growing up in healthcare, learning how to care for community, but also learning how healthcare systems work, learning how, learning about the challenges of, you know, what nurses and doctors face, and also those who come into, you know, our care. And then as a caregiver, you know, was a part of the unionization movement of SCAU 503, And my best friends are still in care. And yes, I've gone and, you know, went with my journalism degree and went into forensics light, as I put it, doing fingerprint tech work, end of life, supporting medical examiners. You know, so I have a very personal and very professional experience with a lot of these systems and understanding what people need and, you know, what unions need and, you know, how public and private sectors can work or not work together. And, you know, that's something my opponent doesn't have.
On a related issue, on your campaign website, you talk about the importance of reproductive rights and how they're under attack. And this is the year many conservatives believe and many liberals fear that the Supreme Court may roll back Roe versus Wade. Now, Oregon is the only state in the nation with no restriction on abortion. And in 2018, voters rejected a ballot measure that would have restricted the state to use public money to pay for abortions. But the number of abortion clinics in Oregon has fallen from 60 in 1982 to 40 in 1992 to 15 in 2014. In 2014, there were a little more than a dozen. If you get into the legislature, what plans do you have to either expand or protect abortion rights?
I will forever be an advocate and supporter to expand and protect abortion rights because it's work that I've been doing and it's affected me personally. You know, in my work, healthcare work specifically for abortion, I speak openly about being a trans man that has had two abortions. And I get that a lot of people look at, you know, abortion as, well, that's the opposite of choice. You know, I go back to, like, this is not just about having abortions, it's about access to care overall. And in my experience, you know, it was not safe for me to go to typical women's clinics. It took several years of activism before some place like Kaiser Permanente, you know, and what they offer, you know, started to include trans people in the conversation and queer people in the conversation and really educate their people about how we need care and how our bodies work. You know, it's very similar to cis bodies, but also not. So, you know, going to these clinics was the only way I could get care, not just for abortion, but, you know, if I needed blood drawn, if I was, you know, having trouble with endometriosis and I just needed to talk to somebody who understood that, you know, I was assigned female, but was also going through some other changes. So I really, you know, want to make sure we understand that this is not just about, child planning, family planning, which is incredibly important, and everybody should have the right to choose, but it's about so much more than that. And given how progressive Oregon is, we are going to probably see Roe versus Wade overturned, and 230% more people are going to be coming to Oregon looking for health care, looking for jobs, and looking for housing. And I'm already starting to see that. So I'm here to say, you know, we really need to dig in and protect and expand these rights, and we really need to create collaborative programming at the community level so we can brace ourselves for the next 3 or 6 years.
You said 230% more people are going to be coming to Oregon looking for those services. Where'd that number come from?
Those are numbers from various organizations, including Planned Parenthood and Pro-Choice over the last years, mental health care workers, medical workers, tracking statistics, much like you were quoting earlier about how many abortions are taking place, you know, about which states are actually rolling those back or banning those is where those numbers come from.
Kate Brown was the nation's first bisexual governor. Oregon's legislature and municipalities have had many LGBTQ candidates and incumbents over the years, but recent violence against the trans community in particular has focused public attention and more calls in the legislature to pay more attention. So as a trans person and someone aspiring to the District 35 seat, how will you bring more attention and support to Oregon's LGBTQ community?
Oh, it sounds like you're inferring that, you know, Kate running for Kate Brown becoming governor somehow opening a floodgate for trans inclusion. Is that right?
Yes.
I don't really believe that is what opened a doorway to conversations around transness. I really want to make sure that happening goes towards all of the, especially the Black and Brown, queer and trans, you know, LGBTQ folks who have been doing the work in Oregon, really hard for the last 15 years at the very least. You know, did it help to have a bisexual, governor in office? Sure, a little bit, you know, and yes, with her influence, she certainly, reached out to folks in our community. So, you know, I just want to make sure we pay respects to all of the luminaries out there who have been working in all the different zones, not just politics, you know, all sectors. So I think that's really what has changed the tide here in Oregon. And, you know, you could say I volunteered as tribute to be the one to continue to tell our stories, but also use my expertise to protect our rights, and protect the rights of others, and make sure people understand that this is overall a human rights issue. Trans rights are human rights. So in telling my story as a trans person, who's Black and Native, and telling my story as a queer person, a pansexual person, I humanize it and make sure everyone knows, you know, this is about all of us, you know, and I'm not afraid to tell that story.
Well, I appreciate the clarification at the start, but the second part of the question was still, what will you do, or what plans do you have to bring more attention and support to Oregon's LGBTQ community? Like, do you have any policy ideas, or do you
have? I have
any...
a lot of thoughts about that for sure. Yeah, I get that question fairly often, as if to be LGBTQ or trans, there's a specific agenda like we've got that we're going to roll out, and I think that's something cishet people presume. I think it's also part of the polarized argument around LGBTQ people. I think before I announced my run, or when I was just fresh to running, you know, I think those who don't understand the LGBTQ experience were really wondering whether I was actually going to talk about it. I felt a lot of pressure too. Do I just focus on, you know, the other part of my wheelhouse, or do I really become incredibly transparent about my identity? I've been out for a long time, but you know, I decided I don't need to separate and compartmentalize any of this at all. And just me running is historical. I would be Washington County's first Black legislator, first Native legislator, and Oregon's first trans legislator. That's a really big deal. And so, you know, to answer your question, what would I do, you know, in office to protect and to further our lives? I would continue the work in healthcare and housing that I've done that benefits everybody. And then, of course, I would always be there, whatever capacity I have, to protect the LGBTQ community, especially my Black and brown kin, and also trans kids and queer kids. I have a queer kid. Right now, a hot button subject is, you know, how our kids, our trans and queer kids, are a battleground for the hundreds of anti-trans and queer laws that are just roiling across our nation. And they're here in Oregon, too. And I'm going to be there to speak out about that and make sure people realize that this is the new frontier of human and civil rights, and they should be on the right side of it, which is protecting us.
Okay, I appreciate that. Related to how residents in Newburg tried and failed twice to remove two of the school board's most conservative members who were instrumental in restricting Black Lives Matter and LGBTQ symbols from being displayed in the district, what does the fact that they mounted a strong effort to remove those conservative members but couldn't remove them tell you about education in Oregon as it relates to diversity issues?
I think this is probably the toughest question you've asked me. only because Oregon's education system financially is very labyrinth, that we've been, not just me, I say we as in the collective we or the royal we, as it were, have been working to solve. And I want to say, preface initially, that, you know, on that note, we need to have chief financial officers. We need to have the financial experts back in the conversation at the House. That is not happening. We do have community committees. We do have community inputs, but school board chairs and school boards overall are very frustrated that the financial information is not getting to the House. And then the House and representatives and Senate, you know, they rely on this community input. So that's the work that I'm doing to help solve that that challenge. And then moving forward to what we were saying about, you know, the efforts to remove, you know, incendiary school board chairs. This is a really complicated, multi-intersectional arguments that would probably take a whole other segment to unwind. But, you know, the sentiment that I'm getting is school boards want to do the right thing. They want to support communities of color. They want to support LGBTQ people, kids, and families, and they're trying to figure out how to strike this balance between, really, I would say, overly conservative groups who are still learning about the diversity of our communities as our diversity is growing. That's something that's a scientific fact about Washington County, for example, in my district too, where we are growing incredibly fast. We're going to see a lot more people of color moving here over the next 2 years, younger demographics that are looking to put down roots. And so I think that is just bolstering these arguments. And I get that people want to feel empowered to be able to maintain and support diversity. And I wish I could say that there's something at the Oregon State House that we can ultimately do about that, apart from just holding space. But a lot of these conversations and a lot of these motions need to happen at a grassroots level, need to happen at the ground. You know, I think that some of the administrators are reluctant to change, and that's pure and simple where we're at. I wish I had a more glorified special answer for you, but I really think when you're talking civil rights and human rights, power recognize that you're human, and these conversations take time, and they take a little bit of, they take some fight.
And I talk to a lot of candidates, and I get a lot of responses that, you know, one could easily consider glorified. So straightforward and simple, really, I think is what listeners want.
Well, great. I can certainly deliver that. Yeah, I think going ahead to just add on that is, I hate to use the language we see and hear often in endorsements, but people want a champion, and they're tired of the typical political status quo. And that is something that I completely understand. It's really awful, treacherous stuff out there. And I believe in realness, and I believe in getting work done, and I'm being honest about what I'm seeing and sitting with what people are telling me. And I do think that in education, which I almost went into several years ago, there are administrators there that just, you know, can make things difficult for school boards and committees. And I do believe that we will see our rights totally protected, even though things seem really dark right now. But we really need to put the pressure on those people, and we need to do practical things, like I mentioned earlier, making sure that financial experts are involved in school board decisions, because that also affects equity. That also can, turn the tide in terms of how well communities are being supported, and where the money is being allocated towards.
You operate a CSA in Beaverton, so you know the importance of transitioning to a sustainable economy. But many of the people in Oregon's resource industries, like timber, for instance, feel that that's code for more government regulations of state lands, more restrictions on logging, higher taxes that'll put their businesses out of business. So as a legislator, what do you do, or what do you plan to do, convince people in those rural areas through your votes in the legislature to move to a more sustainable economy?
Yeah, so if I'm to understand right, you're prefacing this, you're speaking to people, some people being afraid of a green economy as it, you know, under the idea that it might undermine their way of life. And what am I going to do about that?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yes, okay. It's a really big, thank you for clarifying. It's a really big subject because, climate change is real. So, to answer your question, you know, overall, whether we are unincorporated lower, or whether it is our neighbors who are a lot more rural than us, and the green economy things like the Green Deal and all these things, I'm in support of these, and they're very hard conversations to have, because on the progressive side, I think people need to listen better. They need to understand that outside of a metropolis, of an urban area, you know, the supports are not as they're not similar, you know, and I think that gets lost in translation, even in healthcare, where it's like for rural people to speak of healthcare for all, they're worried about their smaller healthcare providers leaving. So when it comes to like job security and housing security in rural communities, which do get hit really hard because we're reliant on different economies, I'm here to say, okay, well, let's listen and see how we can meet in the middle with this. I don't see a greener economy, to use that term, or biodiversity, as being separate from what somebody outside of Beaverton Aloha wants, or somebody outside of the city wants. And I think that's why people have been getting very frustrated and disappointed in, Oregon politics and the Democratic Party, is because there is no nuance. And we really need to have this nuance in our infrastructure going forward. Overall, we need better programming, collaborative programming, and better infrastructure that, gives and allocates money to communities as they need it, not a blanket fix. So that's what I'm about, and how I plan on continuing to have these conversations with people in all different areas and how it's up in Oregon at the state level.
You're a parent, so I want to ask you this. I have talked with a number of conservative candidates, and when I ask them what kind of Oregon do they want to see for their kids, they tend to refer back to an Oregon of the past when they feel that it was safer or cleaner or had more opportunities. So I want to ask you the same question. What kind of Oregon do you want to see, for your child?
I would like to see an Oregon that has more programming back in place. Just because kids, I have a 19-year-old. He's back at home, because college is really expensive. And there's not the same supports in terms of, helping to pay for books, helping to pay for housing. There is college housing subsidized. But, in my opinion, it's not good enough. He was paying over $900 a month for, a shoebox and expected to work full time and going to school almost full time. And of course, that caught up with him as it catches up with a lot of students, and at 19, kids are just trying to figure out who they are. They don't know, quite what they want to do. They know what they want, but they're trying to make that work in life, and they need more support for that. When I was in college, we had there was Jobs Plus money to help pay us for books and a variety of things, better grants that actually helped with things outside of just your class stuff. So we pretty much, the name of the game is going to be infrastructure going forward. If we can call it a game, it's going to be making sure that we have lots of creative programs between government and mutual aid and grassroots people that can support Oregon through the hard times that are going to be ahead. So I want an Oregon that has actual supports in place and not just playing a shell game of removing money from one place to another place, but actually some long-term set planning and goals. That's the Oregon that I would like. So that, when we're talking about housing should be required. There's lots of different creative place-making models, not just in the United States, but abroad, that have worked to actually resolve the housing crisis. But it all comes back to having solid programming and not just Band-Aid money where you're just doing something out in a short-term grant or a short-term program. Sustainable programming that's lasting in somebody's life for, 2 to 5, maybe 6 years. That's what I want to see in Oregon. That is what people need. It takes time to build a life. It takes time to get stable. It takes time to find out who somebody is, where they want to go. It takes time to get through college. So, we really need to get these financial supports in place right now.
This is my last question. Why should the voters of District 35 vote for you?
To again underline why people should vote for me, right? This run is historic. And, as diverse, like I said, over 45% of color, we've got a lot of LGBTQ folks out here as well in HD 35. I would be our first representative that is Black and Native, and I would be Oregon's first transgender legislator. And my voice is missing from the legislature. And I'm the only Democratic candidate backed by PACs like Basic Rights Oregon, Planned Parenthood, and Pro-Choice, and others, because of the actual policy shaping work that I've been doing. It's personal for me. This is my home. It's not just a stepping stone political pivot for me. I really do care, and I believe in leaving something better than we found it. And I have the personal lived expertise and professional expertise to make that happen.
Okay. Zelos Marchant is a Democrat who is running for House District 35 in the Oregon Legislature. Zelos, thank you very much for the time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'm Don Merrill. Thanks for listening.